Hey, it's Conrad Thompson, and you're listening to Lex Expressed exclusively here on AdFreeShows.com. And of course, we couldn't do it without the total package himself, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Lex Luger. Lex, how are you, man?
Hey, doing great. How are you doing, Conrad?
Man, better than I deserve. So excited to catch up with you. I guess it's been a while since we talked. What's been going on in Lex Lugerland lately?
Hey, man, just doing my thing, having fun, living life.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. We've all been keeping up with what's going on in the professional wrestling world. I think we're all kind of happy that Cody had an opportunity to finish his story. He's setting records seemingly every time they leave the house. And they had a tremendous Backlash pay-per-view with one of the rowdiest crowds I've ever seen in professional wrestling. Lex, did you have a chance to see any of that crowd? And if so, what'd you think?
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, the way things are going right now internationally, I mean, I got a little snippet of that. We used to go over to Europe and tour, and the crowds were so appreciative and so excited to see us in person. It's like the North American fans were not spoiled, but they, you know, we toured through every few months. A lot of times back when I wrestled, they get to see us in person when they wanted to quite a bit. But man, when we went over there, it was just unbelievable. And I'm seeing that times 100 now with these huge crowds. That was amazing. It really was. It's great. That's great to see. I love it.
It's been really interesting to see how the WWE continues to evolve, and you know, the company just gets bigger and bigger with all these international pay-per-views. We're just a couple of weeks away from the Queen and King of the Ring, which is taking place over in Saudi Arabia. And it's been revealed that Cody's next opponent is going to be, can't believe this is real, Logan Paul. I mean, clearly WCW did a lot of mainstream stuff with Jay Leno and Dennis Rodman, but you and I haven't spent a ton of time talking about Logan Paul. What do you think about what you've seen from Logan and him getting another title shot in Saudi Arabia?
He's a natural. I mean, his camera presence, his persona, his timing. When I saw him do an interview with Cody in the ring, and just his confidence and his timing, and he's so comfortable on the camera. His work in the ring obviously is way beyond the time he spent at it athletically. Even his timing in the ring, it's pretty incredible, and that's going to be a really good match. Really, I think it's going to be really, really good.
I totally agree. I'm looking forward to it, and I'm also looking forward to what they're going to do with the King of the Ring. I think a lot of people watching are thinking that, hey, this could be a big opportunity for Gunther. Have you had a chance to see much of Gunther, and what do you think of his work?
I love his work. I love the way, just the tights and the boots, doesn't he wear his knee pads, like old school. He's like a sort of a combo of throwback and can do the modern day stuff as well. I mean, a nice blend. He has a great look. His interviews have gotten better and better. I like Gunther. He's got the height and the size and just that look he has. I like Gunther a lot. How about you?
I do too. I think Gunther is poised for a top title run. I would love to see him challenge for the title that Damian Priest has someday. And it's been interesting to see how they've continued to grow characters. I mean, just this earlier this week, we saw another wrinkle with Chad Gable, and people are really getting behind Jey Uso, who's got one of the hottest entrances. And
man, that entrance he made over in
crazy.
All the people lit up their cell phones. Oh my gosh, it was like a rock concert.
That's exactly the way I described it to my wife. I showed it to her and I said, this is like Metallica 91 right here. This is crazy.
Yeah. I mean, that shot of him up on the turnbuckle and the crowd, oh, it was just incredible. And talking about, like you said, the crowds, just to go back there a minute, we talk more about the individual wrestlers, but I know, you know, I've heard now Dana White saying we're gonna start doing some combo events, maybe like Friday, Saturday, Sunday nights, and maybe not have the crossover in actual matches, but guys in attendance, and maybe somebody gets in the ring and does something. I think this partnership is evolving, and I think that's exciting too. like a weekend in Vegas with the UFC and the WWE. I just think the potential there is almost unlimited for the fans. I think it's going to be. I'm a fan now. I'm so excited about it. I really am.
I'm glad you mentioned Las Vegas, because that has been in the news. WrestleMania is going to be in Las Vegas next year. And as you and I are recording, earlier today it came out that the WWE got a $5 million rights fee. So they're actually being paid $5 million to bring WrestleMania. And allegedly, it's because Vegas needed help on Easter weekend. So this will be the first time ever that WrestleMania is the day before and the day of Easter. I guess, there's the Easter that I've always celebrated here, and then there's the Orthodox Easter or the Greek Easter, and they're both on the same day this year. That's an interesting strategy for the WWE. What do you think of them having WrestleMania on Easter, and what do you think of WrestleMania in Vegas? That was where you had your first WrestleMania, right?
You know, I just found out it's on Easter just now when you told me.
Oh, wow.
I know how I feel about that. My gosh, I'm going to be away from home on Easter. I'm like, uh-oh.
Crazy.
I just think that I knew Vegas. I thought Vegas was phenomenal pick. I mean, if most sports and entertainment, like the NFL, when they had the Super Bowl there, Vegas, from the quantity of hotel rooms and shows and other stuff to do, it's open 24 hours, 24/7. I mean, you talk about, I got the feeling the NFL, if they could get away with it, was saying that was so profitable and so good. The fans had so much fun in Vegas. If we could run the Super Bowl through Vegas every year and get away with it, we would. I mean, it's just, Vegas is custom made for big events. So having WrestleMania there, I didn't know it was on Easter. I'm like, oh man. But I'm not sure how I feel about that. I'm going to digest that a little bit. But it's a great place to have. I do like moving WrestleMania back a little bit. I'm a big hoops fan, so kind of
yes.
With the Final Four stuff, I think that's a good move. What do you think, Conrad?
No, I totally agree. I mean, I get that. I just never would have ever in a million years guessed it would be Easter. But when we heard the news today that instead of WWE hoping they can go rent a building and do some local promotion and set up shop and draw money, they're getting paid $5 million to show up and turn the lights on. Great deal by Nick Khan and company. Well, what do you think of Vegas as a wrestling town? I mean, you had your WrestleMania debut in Las Vegas, and
I did.
A lot when we see major boxing events or UFC events, MMA events, things of that nature, that there's a lot of quote-unquote casino buys. So the casinos will get together, and a lot of them are owned by the same companies, and they'll buy big blocks of tickets to then use that as sort of bait to entice a whale to come into town and gambling in their casino. And hey, we've got great WrestleMania seats. And as a result, those casino buys usually trade at a much higher price.
Right.
And you set a big record. And I'm wondering, like, on the one hand, that's cool because we're setting the record. But on the other hand, those aren't the true diehard fans who are going to sort of recreate those magic moments that we started the show talking about over in France. These are people who might be casually interested, but they're not the diehards. You've wrestled in front of both, I'm sure. How do you reconcile that as a performer and the businessman in you?
As the performer, I prefer the us regular folk, the wrestling.
Yes. Fans.
But where the bigger sports entertainment gets, and wrestling and football and the NBA, let's face it, the arenas have changed, the buildings have changed, the stadiums, more boxy style. When I walk into buildings now, I'm like, wow, all these, there's so many suites and box stuff. That's corporate stuff, the high rollers, the big money. That's a part of where we're at now. So I don't have any problem with it as from the business side or businessman. I definitely do prefer, I hope we always have that good mix of the original hardcore, dedicated year round, all the event type wrestling fans there as well. So I hope it turns out to be like a really nice blend and everybody profits financially, and we still have a great feel for the event. I thought the events in Vegas went really well as far as the crowd response and the reaction when I was there. So
I got my fingers crossed. They set a record this year. Hopefully they'll break it next year. You know, that's good for the entire business. And speaking of the business, Brad Stanton had a great question this week. He wanted to know, we recently saw Tony Khan wear a neck brace to the draft. What extremes have you gone to in order to protect kayfabe? That's a good question. Did you ever have to keep up something in your real life just to keep up appearances with what we had seen on television? And what was that?
Yeah, I mean, I've had some injuries that were the neck brace. I've done some of that for a week or two. Back in the old school days, or your hand in like a wrap cast. Not just me, but some of the other guys. We were definitely wanted to be authentic. So that's kind of Tony's kind of give it a, make me think of the old days. But I had some of my hands in casts and neck braces on and stuff in different parts of my career, for sure.
I'm curious, have you had a chance to see that storyline? A lot of people are drawing comparisons to the way the Elite have tried to take over AEW. They're saying, hey, this might be their version of the NWO. And of course, well, respectfully, a lot of sequels aren't as good as the original. What do you think of someone trying to recreate a takeover angle? Could it still work in 2024? And what do you think of what you've seen so far?
Well, I think it could work. I think it's going to be difficult. Just off the top of my head, as you bring it up, I haven't given that a lot of thought. But, you know, with Tony, everybody knows Tony, he's from a billionaire family. Tony owns and has the final say. So, I mean, you can do some creative stuff storyline-wise, but, I mean, I don't think anybody's going to think that actually that the Young Bucks or any group of wrestlers is going to be taking over AEW based on the ownership with Tony. In my opinion, but
yeah, it's going to be hard to suspend that disbelief. Yeah. I understand what you're saying there.
Right. Just as I, like you said, that earlier businessman, I mean, everybody knows Tony owns and runs that.
Yes.
No doubt about it. Whether you agree with what he does all the time or not, he owns that company lock, stock, and barrel. He loves wrestling. I believe his intent's always good. You know, I think he has good intent on it. I think he started out as a wrestling fan, which I love. And he bought in. Now he owns a company. And I think he's doing the very best that he can, for sure. I have no doubts about that when I look at Tony.
Totally agree. I mean, he is a super fan of wrestling. He wants what's best for wrestling and the performers within it and the fans. And I think we're all aligned in that we're pulling for their success. That's better for the business, for sure.
Oh, way better to have at least two viable options for in wrestling for the fans and for the talent as well.
I wanted to ask you about Sting, because there's been a lot of speculation that perhaps we haven't seen the last of Sting. Maybe we're done seeing Sting as an in-ring performer, but he could still be an on-camera performer. And a buddy of mine in my real life, Bart, suggested, hey, what if they made him like the authority figure? And I didn't think that was necessarily a unique idea. I think a lot of people have said maybe he could be the on-air authority or what have you, representing AEW. But then he gave me a wrinkle, and he said you could give him an office, put a red phone on his desk, and call him Commissioner Borden, like the old Batman Commissioner Gordon. I thought that was a genius idea. Could you see Sting embracing an on-air authority figure role like we've seen Stone Cold do before or something like that?
I think he's definitely going to take a little breather right now. I actually was just on the phone a few minutes ago.
Okay.
He's taking a little breather, but I definitely I'd love to see him stay involved to a certain extent. And I mean, for participating in five decades of wrestling, it'd be I could definitely see something like that happening, and I know I would enjoy it. I think you're right. As just in ring, bell to bell, career's over. I could see him maybe once in a while getting even into the ring and doing one move or something, kind of like the Taker did at WrestleMania, but like similar at a big event like that, like a Scorpion Death Drop or something. But I definitely think he's from my viewpoint, not going to do any more bell-to-bell matches. That definitely was a legit retirement match. But yeah, I think he could be utilized if he has an interest. He could definitely be utilized in a big way as on television still, no doubt about it. I like the Borden persona. I think that's a good idea.
I mean, I know it was a little tongue in cheek and a little funny, but it was kind of like right up my alley. I mean, Commissioner Borden with a red phone, I'm in.
And not as a tease, but I will. I know a couple things that may predicate him staying involved a little bit. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Stay tuned. I like it.
Not reveal at this point what I know.
Let's talk about something you can reveal. Adam wants to know, despite your unfortunate motorcycle accident that prevented you from appearing at the 92 WBF pay-per-view, did you still manage to watch the show? If so, what was your reaction to the overall presentation? With the WBF performers having wrestling-style gimmicks, did you view this approach to be an innovative spin on the world of bodybuilding that had potential, or did you feel the show was just a bit too hokey to be taken seriously?
I thought it was doomed. With all that happened. I mean, Joe Weider back then, he dominated the bodybuilding world with Muscle and Fitness, the magazines and all the contests. And hey, kudos to Vince. He's not scared. You want to start a supplement company and a pro bodybuilding company to compete with like the IFBB. But I think the way it was approached, it was doomed. At that time, they're trying to make a transition into fully drug-tested, legit competition, and the guys were really struggling with that, having transitioning off that all of a sudden. And the guys didn't look like they did, and trying to do like a wrestling persona. It was too much, too soon, too fast. I once again, gutsy move by Vince trying, but I kind of thought all along, I didn't see that becoming I think it was kind of doomed from the start, personally.
Let's do a question from our live studio audience. This is a little lighthearted one from our pal Mike Whitaker. He wants to know, what's your favorite steak, and do you cook it, or do you have a favorite steakhouse? That's a good question when you're looking for a good steak.
Well, I have Fenswell City. If Chicago, I'm in Gibson's. If it's Fenswell City, I'm in. Luger's in New York, of course. But in Atlanta here, I'm kind of a Bones guy, or sometimes Capital Grill. There's a McKendrick's here that's real good. But type of steak, I once in a while I love a big tomahawk bone-in ribeye, but I like a good filet. Myself personally, but I know how people say the ribeyes are so much more flavorful, but I tend to get a nice big filet personally.
Hey everybody, Conrad lost power. So my name is Wesley, his producer for this show. So I'm going to hop in and just keep rolling so we get the episode out to you and for our live audience here. So Lex,
to the rescue, Wesley to the rescue.
Yeah, it's fun. Hey, first time for everything.
That weather alley in Alabama, man. That weather comes through this time of year. Woo.
Yeah. While you were answering that question, Conrad just kind of froze. And I was like, all right, is he going to leave and come back? Or, but yeah, he's completely without power. He called my cell midway through your answer. So, all right. A wrestling historian wants to know, what year did you think you were at your best physically?
Wow. There's different opinions on that. As far as the powerhouse look, probably in the late 80s, I was at my peak as body weight wise. I was between 275 and 290 a lot of the time. So that was probably the peak time for that. As far as being I think things changed almost more like they are now, the guys being like ripped, really later in my career, in through the mid, to the late 90s was where I had the best look in that regard. So two different looks. I didn't really have a preference, but I felt those were the two best looks that I had time period wise.
All right.
But they're both different looks, contrasting looks. I was probably the 250 or 260 range when I was ripped versus 275 to 290, two different looks. I enjoyed both of them, but they were definitely a different look for sure.
All right. Next question we got from Bharat Sundarasan. Sorry if I mispronounced that. Says, hey, Lex, love the positivity you bring every month. Compare being part of the Four Horsemen with their old school coolness, which involved wealth and class, to the NWO Wolfpack, which seemed to be more about being cool in a very late 90s sense. Which one came more naturally to you?
Definitely the Horsemen. And I was all in on that with Nate. Just the limousines, the jet flying, and the son of a gun. It was a great time period to be a part of that group and the way we traveled, hung out. It was so authentic. I mean, us guys really did always travel together and fly together, and we were so close-knit, the Horsemen. We went out after the matches and had fun together. I think that authentic part of that came across on television as well with the fans. Now, Kevin Nash and I were very, very close during the Wolfpack times. We traveled a lot together, like drove together, worked out the gym together. And of course, Sting and I have been friends forever. So that was I think the fan who asked the question nailed it. That was more of a late 90s at the time, a cool kind of thing.
Edgier.
Yeah. Different than, totally different than the Horsemen, the jet flying, limousine riding group. I enjoyed both. I thought I was thrilled to be a part of both of them for sure.
All right. Move that picture out of the way. John Ratchford wants to know, says, hi Lex, I enjoy your podcast very much. I also enjoyed your book so much. Now that you walk with the Lord, looking back, are there any angles that you regret that you participated in? Things you wouldn't do now, that with hindsight being 2020. And he says, keep the faith, brother.
I never had to do anything really. And any of the, I'd have to think 15 year career, but there weren't a lot of things that I was asked to do that were like really out there. So, as far as my faith being a part of what I was, I would have loved to have been where I'm at now. Back then, I think I could have been a lot more of a positive influence, like especially in the locker room. I was more me-centered back then. Now I'm more other people-centered. So I would have loved to have been a better locker room leader and behind the scenes. As far as what we did on TV, I looking back, I was never really asked to do anything that was really compromised, like in regard that maybe I nowadays I wouldn't be comfortable with doing or refusing to do.
WCW didn't get as edgy as WWF did, right? That attitude error. So you were kind of, you were kissing babies and Lex expressing, right? in the early 90s. And by the time you went to WCW, they were a little more tame than what WWE was pushing at the time.
I look back on it now through different eyes, but I remember when we got merged with WWE and Sting talked about going into WWE and never did at the time. Sting's biggest, I don't want to speak for Stinger, but his biggest reservation was what was going on there with the Attitude Era and his persona, because he was a born again believer by then, since 1998. So that definitely was a factor him, from my viewpoint, not going in there then, as well as I know him. That definitely played, there was other factors rolled in there, why he didn't end up going in with the other guys from WCW into WWE. But what they were doing, like anything goes content at the time, was definitely a factor for him at the time. So yeah, that I'm thinking about that a little bit too, for sure.
All right. Let's keep rolling. Next question, we got Bobby K. KF5GTX says, Lex, do you feel like you, Macho Man, and Sting eventually joining the NWO helped the angle, or would it have been better if the three of you had remained faithful to WCW?
I think us going over as big as the Wolfpack was, I mean, I've been had the honor of being involved with some pretty big things, but the Wolfpack for that time period, it was red hot. So I definitely got the approval of the fans. So I would have to say it was definitely, the timing of that was a positive move. I wish we could have done it a little bit longer as far as the you know, the red and black and the Wolfpack. But I thought the timing was pretty good on that, to be honest with you.
I don't watch a lot of like team sports and stuff, but I did see all over Twitter that one of the NBA games recently, like they were, I think when they were going to commercial or right at the end of the game, they played the Wolfpack theme. And like even all these years later, people still pop and recognize it. And like even outside of a wrestling audience, you know?
No doubt. We almost got a Road Warrior pop when we'd come out together for like an interview, all of us as a Wolfpack. I mean, it was definitely hot. Fans were into it for sure.
Oh, yeah. All right. Let's see what we got next. Simon C. wants to know, Mr. Luger, did you ever wrestle Vader, or was the timing never quite right? Also, any memory stories of Vader outside of the ring?
I always got along with Leon outside of the ring. I wasn't around him a lot timing-wise. I was in WWE when he was...
You were always kind of...
Left, but I wasn't around him a lot. I think I was in one or two matches. They were more like tag matches with him. He was a big, powerful, explosive dude. I remember that being in the ring with him a couple times. And he liked to work snug, which I didn't mind. I came from a football background like Leon. So those are kind of my memories of Leon. He was always kind of a quiet, kind of a polite guy. From my memory of being around him, I wasn't around him a lot, but that was my impression of Leon at the time.
Yeah, Mick Foley always talked about traveling with him, and I don't think you and he would have kept the same sort of schedule and diet and gym visiting. And
yeah.
So, yeah. All right, that makes sense. Sure. Baharat has another question. How difficult is it to stay humble and grounded in an industry which is built around heightened egos in front of and behind the camera? Is there a fear that you might get left behind if you're not forever selling yourself in front of those running the promotions?
Well, it's different now with social media, as prevalent as it is and everything. It's a whole different ball game. I just think that the danger is in anything with you're doing another persona is becoming, there's always a part of us in it, but keeping them separated and being careful with that you don't become the characters you're portraying for wrestling and your private life. But they do has to be a blend. Most of the guys are the best at, there's a big part of them in their persona and who they portray on TV. So it's definitely difficult. It's challenging. With what goes on. And obviously I became a train wreck. I completely crossed the line. My wrestling persona became who I was instead of who I should have been with my family and everybody else. So I completely blew it in that regard. So I could definitely warn guys, you know, remember who you are, do your persona and do it well, but Remember that that's your wrestling persona. That's not necessarily you and your private personal life, for sure. But that's very, very challenging in what we do, for sure. Even to this day. Back then it was. I'm sure if we ask the guys, it's challenging for them as well, especially I think maybe even more so now because they're almost always on because when they're not in the ring or at TV, they're doing social media and they're cutting things on the different platforms. So it's almost round the clock. So that's where sometimes the danger can come in of remembering who you are. So that's a very good question.
It is. Next, Shockwave Dave wants to know, what was going through your mind in the moment when the balloons were falling and the over-the-top celebration at SummerSlam 93?
I thought it was kind of disappointing for the fans. The Lexus Express tour itself, the way it was done on the USS Intrepid and the response there, the response we had wherever we went on the Lexus Express, there was such a buildup that I think the finish itself was disappointing for the fans. So I felt like it was kind of the air, the tires on the bus got let out in the parking lot and the balloons came down, but the fans didn't get to see the result that I think they wanted.
Yeah.
Actually, a lot of people who know a lot more about the singing than I do felt that big a buildup, they maybe should have had me win, and then they wanted to go with Yoko and cook something up for Brett and I and Yoko at WrestleMania, because Yoko was going to do a run with Taker. Have Yoko come take it back a few weeks later or something, have his run with Taker, then build Brett and I and Yoko back up for Mania, WrestleMania 10. Yeah. It was Vince's real intent anyways, was the WrestleMania 10. He never intended on really putting me over at SummerSlam, but hindsight's always easier, right?
Yeah.
Because he wanted the big champions match to be at the Garden. Always a special spot for him and for his dad. He wanted if he's going to make a long-term champion, if it was me, he wanted to be in the Garden at WrestleMania 10.
Yeah. I, as a fan, was 100% disappointed with the outcome, so... And yeah, it is hard. I mean, I'm not a booker, and I don't pretend to be, but it is, you know, striking when the iron's hot, and after that much of a buildup, it does feel like almost like the Cody not winning at the WrestleMania and then having to, you know, wait the next year. It's that same sort of...
Yeah, I think I've said this before, but I had a Hollywood-type manager on the bus, on the tour, to help, you know, make sure things went well, and... when he found out I wasn't winning, his Hollywood goes, "Oh man, you're dead. Your career's over. Because you're not going to win after all this." He goes, "Oh my gosh, your career's over." Fortunately, he was wrong.
Yeah, that's kind of harsh.
But like that kind of went through my head as the balloons were coming down, dropping on my head too. Is this the end of my career in wrestling? So yeah,
ending your career sitting on the Steiner shoulders.
Yeah. Yes, the balloons falling down hitting me in the head. Oh gosh.
Brad Miller says, "Lex, if you don't mind answering, why wouldn't you do a weekly podcast, I guess, versus this being a monthly?" He says, "You bring so much to the world of wrestling."
Well, I appreciate that. That would be something that's a Conrad question. I'm thrilled doing the monthly hour that we do and being part of the extra content and being interact with the fans. I love doing it. If there's ever opportunity to do more, I would only want to do more if it was something that was the fans really wanted to see, you know. And I think Conrad has a great feel for that, who and when to utilize in what way. So I'm very happy with the role I have now, and just to be a part of being the Podfathers podcast. So yeah. Very happy with what we're doing. I would never have any against doing a little bit more if I was asked to do that, for sure.
Well, unfortunately, his question gets asked the one episode where Conrad is lost and you have me, so I have no insight to offer. So
that would be a good tell him to call back in next
week. Yeah, we'll get that question back to Conrad next time.
There you go.
Ryan McAuliffe says, "What was the best and worst thing about the Lex Express?"
I think the best thing were I flew a couple times to get home to see my family, but I was on that bus almost the whole time. And it was an experience I'll never forget with the fans and seeing how beautiful our country was. And we drove through Wyoming and South Dakota, and we started East Coast. We drove through the whole country. And, that was just an incredible experience, just as an American, to drive through the whole country like we did. And the fan response to the events, some of my memories, we went into Denver at a Toys R Us appearance, supposed to be for 3 hours. they had a double line. It was 100 degrees outside. They had to have emergency bottles of water brought in by the fire department. And we were there for like 6 or 7 hours. Sometimes, after about 3 or 4 or 5 hours, have the fan just come through and shake your hand. And we couldn't really do the autograph thing. It kind of blew my mind. So the buildup to it and the tour was incredible. The drawbacks, obviously, I had a young son, a young daughter. She was just a baby at the time. So time away from the family was tough. But WD was good, and they brought my family in for part of the tour sometimes for a few days. That was good. But I'd say probably being on the road pretty much that whole time and being away from my family was probably the most challenging part for sure.
I know buses are really popular now, and you see Cody and Randy Orton, and a lot of them have just the big deluxe, like it's a mansion on wheels, basically. How decked out inside was the Lex Express? Was it?
It wasn't like the ones that are today, but it was pretty nice.
Yeah, nice job. You're comfortable.
Yeah, I had my snacks and my refrigerator, and I was good, man. Nice.
All right, good deal.
Yeah.
Got a few more here. Tony Flowers says, "Hey, Lex, hope all is well. Did you ever have a chance to work with Ronnie Garvin for any meaningful amount of matches? And if so, how was he to work with?"
I did work with Ronnie a few times, not a bunch of them. I liked Ron Garvin, and had a lot of respect for him. Our styles back then were kind of difficult. He was a tough guy, and I kind of worked a strong style. So that was challenging for us as far as a match goes. But I enjoyed working with them. I think our personas and the way we worked maybe wasn't the best fit as far as working together on a regular basis at the time.
Probably would have been similar to like the Stan Hansen matches.
Yes.
To an extent.
Yeah. Well, two strong workers, that style of work, sometimes it's you almost have to do a Japan style match, which back then people are much more used to it now. But back then, Japan style matches weren't well known, and it was hard for the fans to relate to style wise.
Makes sense.
Uh huh.
Nicholas Chmielinski says, "At your peak physique, what did your macros look like? Did you weigh your food out on the road?"
I couldn't do that. I just tried to keep my protein intake up high. I'd manage my body fat level with my carbs. I always buried them every day, so keep my metabolism surprised. Kept my protein intake steady, at least 1.5 grams per pound of body weight. And I would vary my carb intake daily. And I'd have one treat day a week, kind of shock my body. And that's the way I went throughout my whole career, pretty much.
I think you've mentioned on this podcast before, that's Sunday. Is it the whole day Sunday is your cheat day? Or is you just have like the one meal?
I start out with cookies and donuts with my coffee, which I never would do during the week. And I end up with ice cream late at night. I go the whole day, without a doubt.
Whole day, start to finish.
Absolutely. I love it. I planning my treat day on Thursday. I start buying my cheese and what donuts I want. What's my big cheat meal going to be on Sunday afternoon after church? Is it going to be Italian? Is it going to be, what's it going to be? Nice. I plan it all out. By midweek, I'm already starting to plan what I'm going to do on Sunday. Sure.
Awesome. Scott wants to know, why do a majority of wrestlers have long hair? Is it just a cooler look? Is it to hide calls in the ring, or is there something else? And when do you think it became a thing?
Gosh, a lot of wrestlers had long hair since I've ever known it. Not all of them, obviously. We got quite a contrast. We got the shaved heads, we got the long hair and everything in between. But there's always a good number of guys with long hair. I just think it's kind of you don't have to work a desk job. You can grow your hair out, and kind of goes back to the old rock and roll band days way back when. So kind of free spirit. So I think that's been kind of a thing with wrestling, that it's definitely not a desk job. If you want to have short hair, long hair, shaved head, you can. You don't have to have like the corporate look, the 9-to-5 job look. So I think that's just part of it, I think, for sure. You have the freedom to make the choice. Some guys choose to have long hair.
Yeah. It makes sense how he asked, though, about like the, you know, helping hide your mouth if you are communicating, or like, I guess, some of the impact on the punches and stuff. Like it's messier and there's more, you know, to kind of mask some of that.
Yeah, that's a valid point there. Both those for sure. Yeah.
I think Nash has talked about that on his podcast some, always like having the long hair, like having it in his face just because it was another layer of, you know.
Right, no doubt. I never thought about that. That's actually pretty, yeah. See, I'm learning.
Another good question, Scott.
I'm on the learning tree.
Right. Get Jericho to host one of these.
Yeah.
So Adam wants to know, you were a part of the inaugural Battle Bowl at Starrcade 1991. That night you teamed up with Arn Anderson to defeat Terry Taylor and the Z-Man. What are your thoughts on the Battle Bowl concept at the time, an entire pay-per-view consisting of the randomly chosen tag matches? And I'm curious, were you given any preparation beforehand regarding who would be teaming with you and facing, or was it treated more like a shoot amongst the talent where you didn't know all of the matches until they were announced? So sort of two questions there. First off, just the basic concept itself, Battle Bowl. What were your thoughts?
I wasn't a big fan.
Because of the second half of the question, or just in general?
I just wasn't a big fan of the concept. And we kind of knew what was going on. It wasn't like totally random. But I wasn't a big fan of just randomly putting the guys together with tag teams. There's no chemistry. There's no storyline. I don't know how the fans felt about it, but as being part of it, I didn't feel a lot coming from the crowd. I was not a big fan of that concept.
I'll say as a fan, just because you mentioned it, just because you mentioned how a fan felt about it. I know, like, I was 11 when the first Battle Bowl happened, I think, but I had all of the wrestling figures, and it reminded me of like how when I would play, I would just like randomly have different guys team up just sort of, you know, matches you would never think of seeing. And that was the one cool thing, was just you would see guys interact that you normally wouldn't. But I understand from your point, storytelling, and there's probably a reason some of those guys didn't interact.
There was a lot of long-term angles back then, storytelling. So that was kind of a weird concept at the time. And I get what you're saying now with looking from a kid's perspective, playing with the action figures, and then now with the 2K games and everything, right?
Right.
Unlimited matchups or tag matches. So that's a valid point. I can see that as well. That's a good point.
And then his second part of the question was just more about the talent. Did you guys know basically day of, like, these are the guys you're working, and then you were left kind of your own devices?
Absolutely, we did, yeah.
Cool. Mm-hmm. I felt like we knew the answer, but I just wanted to ask just to get it out there.
We did a lot of ad-libbing back then, but that wasn't totally ad-libbed.
Yeah, so they just, I mean, did they, 91, did you have agents at that point, or were you just given a, okay, you still had agents, and you were just given a time, and who's going over? I know there was always like the just call it in the ring versus when everything got more.
The letters, a lot more of that back then, but yeah, we had agents who would talk about the finish and at the end, where you ended up, and talk over the match a little bit for sure.
Good deal. Mark Bishop asks, how did you like going back to a similar gimmick from the WWE narcissist to the WCW version of yourself after the NWO run died out?
I'm not sure what he means by that question.
So I think he's saying after NWO kind of ran its course, so after Wolfpack, I guess he's saying you kind of became, you're more of a heel, like when you were with Buff, and I guess it was more kind of playing back to the narcissist in a way, just being, you know, the super fit. And
yeah, I mean, my career was, people don't realize a lot of times when I switched back and forth a lot from what people would call a confident baby face that the fans would get behind. I could do that authentically. And some of the guys like Eric Bischoff just said that was my value Well, I was always like one of the main event guys and one of the top paid guys because they could insert me as a top heel or a top baby face at the top of the cards, and that I could almost be instantly plugged in either way, and I could pull it off or get away with it. Guys like Yuri thought that would be a very valuable tool to the company. A lot of times people don't realize behind the scenes, fans don't always know, but a lot of times it was an injury. Like that time Sting blew out his patellar tendon, they switched me babyface. I had Sting limp down to the ring, and I had a big match with Flair where I had him in the torture rack and let him down to jump out of the ring to help save Sting, who was on crutches with his right after surgery. And they switched me babyface, and it got over huge. I was a stone cold, I was a heel at the time. So, I mean, they felt that they could switch me back and forth. So I switched back and forth so many times, you need a scorecard almost at the time to keep track. So that was just part of my persona. When they think where they needed me, a lot of times it was to balance the top end of the roster, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
The guy was injured or something. They need a storyline. They need another so-called top heel. They would switch me to the arrogant Lex, or the with Buff, or with posing in the ring again all the time. Really, I'd go from being a confident babyface to here goes Lex. He's getting a little bit too full of himself. What's going on here? So, but I was told that was maybe not the best for my overall looking back at the totality of my career, but behind the scenes for the companies I worked for, that made me a valuable tool, kind of like a utility all-star player that they could I'm not trying to put myself over, but they could plug in where they needed me, and that made me a valuable asset to the company. And they took care of me for that. I was always one of the top paid guys, and always pretty much had a spot in one of the main events and most of the house shows and pay-per-views. So it stead me well for my 15-year career, without a doubt.
No, I mean, it makes total sense why that would be valuable to a booker, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just out of sheer curiosity.
Flexibility.
Exactly, yeah. Because it would be harder, you know, like if everyone loves Ricky Steamboat, no shade on Ricky Steamboat, but it's harder to, if a top heel goes down, to just switch him to heel, you know, like it's...
Even, right? He was pretty much a babyface his entire career. So some guys, and that's great, some guys were almost entire career babyface, some were almost entire career heels. I just was that guy they switched back and forth, and it worked. So
it's probably a question you've answered before, but just short and simple. Which, if you were going to work another match, if you were able to, which do you prefer, heel or babyface?
Oh, it's always most guys heel. At least back in my day, you got to call the match and lead the match and
more charge.
Absolutely, for sure.
This wasn't part of Mark Bishop. This wasn't part of his question, but he did add this in. I wanted to make sure I got it. He's a bivocational pastor and wanted to say thank you and to Conrad for keeping up the positivity and the encouragement. I need breaks away from things and appreciate the honesty and the positive chats the show provides. So,
well, thank you. Appreciate you, my brother. For sure.
Absolutely. Let me get back over to the live crowd and see what else we got here. Mike Whitaker says, I have a 14-year-old boy that does wrestling and track in school. What do you think would be good for him to keep in shape during his off seasons?
I like martial arts training, flexibility training. Those are two good, great sports for the track. I was a track and field guy in high school. I was football, basketball, and track and field. I like the versatility of keeping active in other sports. It's so specialized nowadays. I know they say you have to specialize, but I still like to see the young men and women have other activities that they do as well along with it, for sure. I think it makes for a more well-rounded young man or woman as well when they're growing up that way.
For sure.
And I think some things they can carry on into their adulthood, whether it's golf or tennis or pickleball now or whatever. It's nice to have some extra things that, because there's some things in sports you can't, you don't end up, unless you become a pro or something, don't carry into your adulthood. So I like to see young people adopt some sports. I just use golf and tennis as examples. They can play in, all the way through their adulthood as well and enjoy and help stay in shape, et cetera.
Yeah, for sure. Greg Jacobson here actually asked about cheat days, but you already kind of talked about that. But he was asking if you just had a cheat meal or entire cheat day and how often.
I'll elaborate a little bit. I do within reason. I usually wake up to my sweets with my coffee, my cookies and or donuts. And then I go to church, and then I usually have a really good cheat meal after church in the afternoon. And then I kind of wind into the evening, and that's my ice cream time. So that's big picture. But I try not to go completely crazy because you can kind of wipe out all the good you did Monday through Friday, excited sort of being keeping it clean, and not overdoing the sugar and the calories. You can kind of wipe out your whole week if you go too overboard. So I try to keep it within reason for sure.
All right. And I think this will be our last one. Coach Keith Morrison says, Lex, when you won the U.S. title for the first time at the Great American Bash in Greensboro in 87 versus Nikita Koloff, did it mean anything to you with the history of the title?
But, you know, it meant so much because that's where after the Magnum had the wreck, and there's so much history to U.S. title. And at that time, the U.S. title was the belt to have other than the world title because it made you automatically the number one contender to the world title. That carried a lot of prestige and a lot of clout. So, yeah, when I came out of that, my memories in Greensboro winning that belt, there's a picture of me holding the belt up with one hand over my head, right out of the cage. I'm covered in sweat. And I look at that. I see the kind of the joy in that picture of me that I felt, I made it. Like, that was I'd won like a Southern heavyweight title down in Florida and stuff when I first started out. But when I became the U.S. champion and the crowd in Greensboro was incredible. And when I was in the back there in that photo, I just remember, man, I'm like the number one contender to world title now. I'm part of the horse. I felt like, man, I've really made it. So yeah, that was definitely a big moment for me. And I still, to this day, the only belt I have, a lot of guys have a lot of memorabilia. I've auctioned off all my tights and all my stuff through the years for charity and stuff, but I had the U.S. title at my house. That shows you how that's the one thing I've always kept in my two speaking engagements for the inspirational or motivational type speaking. They don't go to schools. I always bring that U.S. title with me. So yeah, it's very special to me.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
All right. Great question.
Yeah. Great. Super question.
So I think that's all of our questions, and thank you everybody for joining. And you're seeing in real time here that I don't know how to close out a podcast because I'm not Conrad.
You're doing a great job. Oh, Conrad has weathered the storm literally.
I'll text him in just a moment and make sure. But yeah, again, thank you everybody who is in our live audience for joining. We will be back next month. And Lex, thank you as always. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks to everybody. Right. Sure. Y'all have a great time. Thanks.
And we will see everyone next time on Lex Expressed.